Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. Critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a little nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There's only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
All right. Good morning. Welcome to the Sports Hub Golf Club. Hardy here with you on what is shaping up to be maybe the last really awesome summer-like weekend. So if you have a chance to play today, number one, I'm jealous. Number two, you know what? I might just make time. You just heard Matt McCarthy say that I got to be, I'm here until 8, and then I got to be, get to be on with Clyde Sims later on, previewing the Revolution match tonight at Gillette Stadium. I'll be down there with Clyde. I think that's totally acceptable. I want to get out and play a little bit here this afternoon. I think my daughter and I might get out and play a few holes. So this is the only reason why I bring it up is because it is going to be a glorious, glorious early fall day. And not to the point where there's leaves all over the course and you can't find your golf ball. So that's good news, number one, especially for you if you're heading out to the course right now. I have something that will, I think, serve all of us pretty well on the show today. A guy by the name of Michael A. Zildjian. He wrote a book called Zilosophy, and it is essentially, and we talked about a lot of books last week. We talked about a lot of books that deal with the mental side of golf. I would say maybe as many as half of the golf books that I've seen and that I'm familiar with that are on the instructional side. When I was doing my kind of informal list of best golf books last week, I broke them down into, golf stories versus golf instruction. And there are only a handful of golf instruction books that I have even read, much less would recommend. It's a tough thing to do, to pick up a book and read about the golf swing. And even, time-honored, wonderful books, whether it's, Jack Nicklaus' Golf My Way or Tiger's book or any of that, it's really hard to come across. I almost bought a week or two ago, I came across a copy of The Stack and Tilt Method on Golf, which is this whole philosophy about loading up on your left side. And a lot of players do it, whether they realize they're doing it or not, especially on short game shots. But I put it down and said, reading a book about the swing is really frustrating, because all you want to do when you're reading about golf is go out and try it for yourself with a golf club. And it's, what are you going to do? Take a book with you to the range, flip it open. But for that reason, a lot of the books deal with the mental side of golf, and there's some great books out there. One of the first ones I ever read was called The Inner Game of Golf, which is based on this whole series of inner skiing, inner tennis, The Inner Game of Music, and they're fantastic books. There's Zen Golf. There's all the Dr. Joseph Parent books that we've talked about on this show, and we've had him on the show. So kind of along those lines, this gets inside not just golf, though. There's a lot of life stuff in this. So we're gonna talk with Michael Zildjian here later this morning, who is I think a local guy. I'll find out, and I think that'll give you the proper mindset for today and for the next time you go out and play. Hopefully, the other thing I wanted to get to right off the top here, and I'm not gonna get all bent out of shape about it, but I saw this 2 days ago. Tony Romo's latest PGA Tour appearance, which is enough to send me over the edge right there. Tony Romo's latest PGA Tour appearance could cause him to miss a big NFL game. Now, Tony Romo, if you've never heard me talk about this before, is out on this fool's errand trying to, you know, make his way onto the PGA Tour in some way, shape, or form. And I will preface all of this by saying Tony Romo is a wonderful player. By all accounts, he is a really a borderline elite golfer. In terms of amateur players, he is just fantastic. I don't know what his latest handicap is, but I believe he's, you know, right around scratch, okay? He has done this before. And I first remember hearing about this when Tony Romo was trying to qualify for the U.S. Open, which he has never done. Tony Romo has competed in 3 PGA Tour events. He competed in 2 last year, in the 2019 season, which began around this time last year, and once in the 2018 season. Needless to say, Tony Romo has never made a cut. I believe he was DFLs in all three of those tournaments. DFL, dead effing last. Not only did he not make the cut, but he didn't make the cut by a mile. Like, just not happening. Now, according to Andrew Marchand of the New York Post, CBS has a contingency plan because Tony Romo would like to take a day off from his job in the booth, the lead analyst chair alongside Jim Nantz, so that he can play in the Safeway Open. It's happening next week. Third event of this new tour season. We talked about this last week, that the PGA Tour season has already started. It's in Napa Valley. It, unfortunately for Romo, will coincide with the September 29th NFL game between the Bears and Vikings in Chicago, where Romo is supposed to, of course, be with CBS. A couple of things here. Number one, I don't begrudge Tony Romo taking a spot from somebody, either on a sponsor's exemption or anything else. The tour can handle it. The players can handle it. And this time of year, this is really what these tournaments are about. The reason why the PGA Tour season starts so early is because there's all these events where players who are just trying to get onto the tour and stay on the tour have a chance to make some cuts and to get some FedEx Cup points. I don't even know if they start accruing at this point, but essentially in order to stay on the tour, you need to have played well enough in a certain number of tournaments and make enough money to retain your tour card and to keep going. So this is why these events exist, right? For players who might be struggling a little bit or just trying to make their way. I get it. However, Tony Romo isn't really one of those guys. He's not a career golfer, but he's not even a guy who's got a chance in hell of getting onto the PGA Tour. But I don't even begrudge him that a little bit, because the sponsors like having him there, and it probably does something for the crowds, much in the same way that having Steph Curry at a Web.com event drew record numbers for a Web.com event, because it was just cool to see Steph Curry out there. And I'm sure it'd be cool to see Tony Romo out there for a certain number of the fans who come out to watch. What bothers me is the fact that the tournament runs September 26th through the 29th, 29th being a Sunday, and they're going to have to find someone else to fill in the booth. I have news for you, CBS. Go ahead and schedule Romo in the booth on the 29th, because he ain't making the cut in this one either. Don't you worry about Tony Romo's availability on the Sunday of a golf tournament that he's playing in, because he'll be available. He'll be available by Friday at 4 p.m. Once he cards his 77 in the second round and misses the cut by 12 strokes, he can get on a plane and head right on over to that Bears-Vikings game in Chicago. He'll be in the booth right alongside Jim Nantz and it won't be a problem whatsoever. The fact that this guy might bang in for a job on Sunday because he's playing in a PGA Tour event that starts on Thursday is comical. And I will state it again, Tony Romo is so much better at this game than I or most people I know will ever be. I get it. He's really, really good. He's not going to make any kind of a success for himself on the PGA Tour. It's not going to happen. And that this is from my own observations from watching over the years, watching guys who have, you know, tried to do this. You know, John Smoltz, Champions Tour, maybe a cut. You know, I think he qualified for the Senior Open. But other guys have tried this over the years. Mark Mulder, retired pitcher, shot rounds of 75 and 74. He missed the cut at the Safeway. There is a huge difference. And again, Romo has game. He's got game to the point where, you know, he made an eagle during the AT&T Byron Nelson in the first round last year. I think he shot a 74 in the final round of another tournament, maybe the one that was being played in Puerto Rico while the real best players in the world were at a match play event. He can go out there and shoot some scores, but a 74 up against guys who are, during that same tournament, shooting 64s, it's a different game. It's not a knock on Romo. It's that these guys are playing a game that you should be borderline unfamiliar with. I truly am. Romo goes out there. It's like, God, 74. All I had to do was knock 4 strokes off here and 5 strokes off there. Forget it. You know, I go out. If I go out today and shoot an 88, I can go there and scratch my head and say, God, you know, I really could have shot an 84 had I just, you know, turn those 2-3 putts into 2 putts and instead of making that double bogey on 16. But to knock 4 strokes off of an 88, that's a reasonable goal. If you're Tony Romo and you're playing at a pretty high level already, to knock 4 strokes off of around a 74 on a course that's set up for a PGA Tour event to try and turn that 74 into a 70, you're talking about, and I'm not exaggerating, years of work of doing nothing but golf. You know, to go from a handicap of 1 to a plus 1 on the other side of scratch, you're talking about years to knock those 2 strokes off your handicap. So that'd be my advice to CBS. You want Tony Romo wants to go play in that tournament next week, Safeway Open, but he's afraid he's not going to be there for the game on Sunday of that tournament weekend. You can go ahead and fill him in. Don't even bother getting someone else to go in there with Nance. Romo will be there. It'll be fine. Michael Zildjian is, you know, he's like a positivity guy. He's like a philosophy guy. He'd probably just sickened by my negative attitude toward Tony Romo's attempt to get on the PGA Tour. Anyway, I won't ask him about it, but we'll ask him about his book, Zilosophy on Golf, coming up next here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Getting you ready to hit the links. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Welcome back to the Sports Hub Golf Club. Joining us now is the author of a book called Zilosophy on Golf, Observations on the Parallels Between Life and Golf. It's by Michael A. Zildjian. Michael, thank you for being on the show. What's going on?
Hey, Hardy. Thanks for having me, man.
Well,
and just another beautiful almost fall day in New England.
Yeah, these are the days we like. You know, it's like the weather is good for golf, but it's not to the point where anything off the fairway is going to be underneath a bunch of leaves.
right. You got a couple more weeks.
Right. Until you get to that point. Is that really a lost ball? Am I really charging myself a penalty? I mean, it was right here. I mean,
there
what are we doing?
That's a good one. It gets right into the book. One of the chapters is called Integrity. Playing by the rules. You know if you cheated.
Oh, yeah.
If anybody else does. That's why golf's such a great game.
Well,
you got to call a penalty on yourself, or if you just need a relaxing afternoon and you don't want to count that lost ball and that helps you get through the day, you know, that's fine every once in a while, too.
It's very zen. Very zen of you. We're going to get to all that. First thing I got to ask you, Michael, Zildjian.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
And by the way, are you in Watertown, by the way? Are you a local guy?
I am in Watertown. I am a local guy. I grew up in Watertown. I lived in California for about 20 years, and mostly in L.A. and was in the entertainment business, and got tired of that and moved back a few years ago to do this, start a new career as a writer and a speaker, and that's what I'm doing now.
Okay, first things first, an Armenian in Watertown. Shocking. I can't believe
that.
And Zildjian, you say that, you say entertainment business. I mean, you've got to be related to the Zildjian symbol family in some way.
I am. They are my cousins. I never worked for them. I did do some projects with them. We talked about some helping them with some branding a few years ago. But that's my family. It goes all the way back to the 1600s in Turkey. And it's the oldest continually family run business in the United States, right here in Norwell, Massachusetts.
I lived in Roslindale for 13, 14 years.
And oh, yeah.
A gentleman right up the hill from me, his name is Alan. And Alan is one of these guys who's just, you know, a great neighbor and always good to talk to. It turns out Alan's father partnered up with one of your ancestors, decades and decades ago, and they made a bunch of Zildjian symbols the backyards and the basements of the homes that were like right up the street from me. And you know,
that's crazy.
So many stories, but completely off topic. Believe me,
it's funny because, you know, people read the book and they know I'm a speaker about self-awareness and all that stuff. Like you said, we'll get to. But very often, one of the first questions I get, whether I'm speaking or doing a radio interview, is about that. So I'm used to it. It's a great family heritage. And, you know, I'm lucky to have that story to tell.
So what was your involvement in the entertainment business and music? You talk about it in your book. I mean, it's intriguing.
I was mostly a concert promoter and producer. I also did some licensing for TV and film, worked for a record label, did some artist management, even dabbled in a little TV and film production. I did a little bit of everything. Honestly, it was one of the things that I started to think I need to find a different career eventually, because I have tons of friends, and I still do, that are out on the road all the time. One of my best friends is a touring production manager for REO Speedwagon and Brian Setzer and Stray Cats and a bunch of other bands. And, you know, he's in his 50s now, and he's like, dude, I just want to get off the road. And so I was really always mostly on the venue side, so I didn't have to travel as much. But just the concert production days were 15, 16-hour days, and sometimes those would be three in a row. And it was grueling. So like you said, it was a young man's game. And as I was getting older, decided I wanted a new path. Ironically, I chose something where now I travel all the time to go speak to people all over the place about golf and self-awareness and all kinds of other stuff. So I kind of cut back in it, but not as high intensity or as high pressure as it was before.
All right. Well, feel free to tell your friend to tell the guys in REO Speedwagon you're welcome for revitalizing Roll with the Changes. We have been instrumental in bringing that song back to arenas. Michael A. Zildjian, the book is called Zilosophy on Golf. So you lay out in the book how you kind of had this awakening of your own, you know, the quintessential and almost cliche drive out to the desert that people in L.A. do. But for you, it worked, and you started writing about golf because, you know, you have a lot of ideas that are, you know, philosophy based. But why golf? Why apply them to golf in the first place?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of ways to answer that. One is I'm not really sure. It was just it seemed like a fun and easy vehicle to pick to tell the story that I wanted to tell. Like you said, I had this sort of stereotypical moment. My midlife crisis was, hey, I need to do more and something more important, not I need to go get that fast car and that fast girlfriend. I had already done that stuff, so I knew that wasn't it. And the moment for me was the Boston Marathon bombing that changed everything. I decided I need to take a leadership role in this world, and we can't keep treating each other like this. So I have to go on this journey of my own self-awareness, because I can't really control what other people say and do, but I have complete control over what I say and do if I'm aware of it. And then that hit me all at the same time. Well, wouldn't that be a great way to play golf? Through self-awareness of that, this is on me. It's just me, a stick, and a ball. And I have all the excuses in the world at my disposal if I want them. What the stuff going on inside my head, what I'm thinking about, the conversations I've had, the people that I know, the things I have to do, the things I've done, whatever, and all the chaos going on the course around me, other people hitting balls all over the place or yelling and screaming or whatever they're doing. I can use any of those excuses as a reason why I'm playing bad, or I can say, am I really doing my best to put myself in a position to make my best swing one swing at a time? And I just thought the parallel between life and golf in that moment was just so important and such a cool way to tell the story, so that it wasn't some boring self-awareness book that's like, hey, you're doing it wrong. But, hey, you know, this is a great way to look at it. And if you practice the things in this book, patience, integrity, dealing with frustration, and you and visualization, putting the things out there that you want. If you practice those things, yes, it will help you play better golf, and that's great. We all love that. But really, it'll help you live a better, happier life in general. I mean, one of the best things anyone's ever said to me in this journey, in this new part of the journey, is that I was at a golf clinic, and this guy came up to me and shook my hand. He said, I really want to thank you for this book. It's made me a better golfer. But more importantly, it's made me a better dad.
Wow.
And to me, that was like, okay, I did it. I don't know how I did it, but I did it.
I don't doubt it, because you mentioned there's a story in the book where you're talking about like caddy daddies. And somebody was on the course and like giving his kid a hard time. I think it was like his 10-year-old son. I think we can all see ourselves, you know, in that caddy daddy role from time to time. But you're right. There's a lot of stuff in here that speaks not just to golf and the swing, and but just some good life lessons in here, too.
Yeah, and that's a great point, too, that you bring up that story, because, first of all, it's appalling when you're stuck in it with the poor kid, right?
Because
he's a great golfer, super sweet kid. And really, it came to a point of frustration where his dad was practically jumping up and down, throwing a tantrum, saying, you have no patience. And me and my buddy are looking at him going,
pot, kettle, hello?
Where do you think he learned that from, guy? You know?
Dude.
And I think that really, ultimately for me, Hardy, this is all about that, right? We're all setting examples for kids. I don't have kids, but I have nieces and nephews. And I have tons of friends that have kids that I'm like an uncle to. We're all setting examples for kids, and we're teaching them whether we realize it or not. So if we're sitting there pointing fingers and getting into this political discourse of those stupid people over there are the problem, and you know, that whole conversation, then we're only teaching them that that's the way to deal with it. But if we all take on the responsibility of like, well, why don't I just worry about myself and try and do my best and not worry about what everybody else is doing, so that I can bring my best to the world and work better with the other people out there that are also struggling, then isn't that a great way to live life? And aren't we teaching kids to build a world that we all claim to want, which is a more peaceful, harmonious world? But all we do is go and throw mud at each other in front of them, so they grow up doing the same thing.
Well, this is fascinating stuff. But Michael, here's what I would like to do. I want to step aside just here for a minute and then come back and talk about how we can start applying this to the actual game of golf. Can we do that?
Yeah, we can absolutely do that.
Okay, so stay with me for 1 second, and we'll continue with Michael A. Zildjian, Zilosophy on Golf. More with him coming up here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. You're listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
Welcome back to the Sports Hub Golf Club. Still with us, Michael Zildjian, author of Zilosophy on Golf. And Michael, there's one thing that I really liked. It's early on in your book, and you talk about the moment of impact. Because, you know, a lot of golf books have talked about, you know, blocking out the noise. And this goes back to, you know, inner game of golf and Zen golf and all this stuff. But you really, I think, boil it down to an instant. You know, a millisecond of when you're really trying to achieve that absolute
clarity. And this is going to sound like nonsense to anybody who doesn't play, but anyone who's played golf knows what I'm talking about. That moment, that sweet spot moment at impact. Can you explain to me what it is about the moment of impact and your thoughts about it?
Yeah. So when you're playing golf, when you hit the ball, when you set up, all that stuff you do before, after, during, all of that stuff boils down to that one little millisecond, like you just said, where you actually make contact. So everything that you should be doing, all your awareness should be beforehand, bringing you into a setup so that you're clear and free at that brief moment of impact. And then you're immediately letting go to, hanging on to what happens from there, because you can't control it once you've hit it. So it's really about setting yourself up, being calm, clearing your mind, letting go of everything. And like you said, it's kind of a Zen practice of just like letting go of everything and just hitting the ball. When I putt and I'm putting well, my eyes open really wide and everything kind of goes blurry. And I'm just staring at that one little point on the ball that I'm trying to hit and just smooth shoulders and rock through. And when I putt well, I almost don't even see anything. It's more feeling. So the moment of impact is about, like I said, setting yourself up beforehand to be in a position to make your best swing and make the best contact you can, given the situation you happen to be in. Now, that could be on the tee box, or that could be in the middle of the poison ivy. Either way, you got to find a way to settle yourself and do everything you can to get that perfect millisecond that you're trying to get to.
Michael, there's another part of your book where you talk about the breaks that you get on and off the course. And someone else said this years ago. It may have even been like Bill Clinton or George Bush. It was a 90s president who said golf was like life, so much so because it's all about the breaks you get and the ones you don't get, the ones that you deserve and don't deserve. It's how you deal with them. And I think you've got some interesting things to say about that, too.
Yeah. So golf is really a practice, right? It's something that you can never perfect. You know that. You play the game. Watch the best golfers in the world. They miss shots all the time. Their misses happen to be a whole lot better than yours and mine, right? But You're never going to play it perfectly. Things are going to go wrong. And then again, that's a great parallel of life as I'm talking about it, to just keep that in the back of your mind. Things go wrong out there in life and you got to just carry on. You can't always control where the ball goes. You can get a bad break, or you might have not set yourself up to make that good swing and you weren't really paying attention and now you shanked it, but you got to go find it and hit again. Hit it again, no matter where it is. And I say that in the book. Jason Gore wrote the foreword. He's a good friend of mine. Some of the best advice I've ever gotten as a golfer is something that someone told him. Golf is a really simple game when you look at it like this. Hit the ball, find it, and hit it again. Right? But nothing's that simple for human beings because we like to complicate everything. Instead of that, we're walking over the ball. Why did I hit it like that? You're such a bad player, you know. I mean, we say things to ourselves on the course that if we said them to any other person, we'd have no friends or family that would talk to us. As golfers, we all know that. We say unspeakable things to ourselves about the way we play. And guess what? How often does that make you play better? Almost never. About anything that happened before or anything that might happen after. But right now I'm here. But then whatever happens once you hit it, you've got to just accept it. All right, it's in a bunker, or it's in the water, or it's in the fairway. And you've got to learn the practice of acceptance to go deal with it no matter what happened.
Michael, I feel like you and I could talk about this all day, but...
Yeah, man, let's do it.
Let's just keep going. I want people to pick up the book. It's called Zilosophy, Z-I-L, and like philosophy, but Zilosophy on Golf by Michael A. Zildjian. And... I'm not surprised to hear that people have gotten more out of this book because there isn't any real instruction in this. It's more or less about preparing your mind, not only for you know, hitting the shot, but for, like you said, being in the moment on that stuff. And that is great advice just for everyday life. You know, whatever you're doing at that moment, do that. Do that one thing. And I think that's good advice for anybody who is. It seems like we're all torn in three different directions these days.
Yeah, well, I mean, we live in a world where you have to be multitasking. I mean, I hear your phone buzzing in the background. There's all kinds of stuff going on, right? But you're not, that's not going on right now for you. Right now we're having a conversation, but I could be thinking about the things that I got to do after this conversation. Well, that's not going to help me have a good conversation with you and tell people about my book, right? So I have to just stay present to this moment right now.
And same thing on the golf course.
Exactly. And like you said, you know, it's a philosophical exploration. This is about the mental side of golf. I'm not a swing coach. I've got some friends who are pretty good golfers. So if we ever played, I can give you a tip or two, but that's not what I do. But what I'm really good at is observing people and figuring out, you know, how people do what they do and why they do what they do, and simplifying things so that, you know, each chapter, as you saw, it's an 18 chapter book. Just like a golf course, laid out like a golf course. Every chapter, as you know, has practice drills and pro tips at the end. So if it's a chapter about acceptance, or if it's a chapter about patience, there are real life things that you can do to practice those things that will allow you to play better golf. I promise you, Hardy, if you practice the things in this book, you will become a better golfer. And people ask me all the time, hey, how many strokes will this take off my game? You know what? That's not up to me. That's up to you. I wrote the book already. Now you take it, and how hard do you want to work on these things? That's going to decide how many strokes you're going to take off your game.
And ironically, the more you work at these things, the less work you're going to have to do, because you're not going to be thinking and working. A lot of it has to do with just allowing your swing to kind of happen and do what we've all hit shots on the golf course. Say, oh, why can't I just do that? Well, you can. You can hit the shot. It's just getting out of your own way and allowing the things to happen so that you can hit that shot. So
that's right. And you know, we often on the golf course or in life, we get caught in downward spirals. Well, just negative piles on top of each other. This is the opposite effect. We're talking about a positive upward spiral where by playing better golf, you're actually going to live a happier life and be more calm in general. And by living a happier life and being more calm in general, you're going to play better golf. And they build off of each other. And you know, it really has helped me. It's helped a lot of people. I'm playing better than I ever have because I'm letting go of the things that I shouldn't be hanging on to. And I'm staying present and I'm just enjoying it. You know, the thing is, life and golf are really hard games. They just are. And they're not going to get easy, but they can get easier. And even if though they're hard, they're supposed to be fun. So why not just enjoy the ride and see where it takes you?
Michael Zildjian and his Zillosophy, author, podcaster, and you can find out more at zillosophy.org or just, you know, pick up his book, Zillosophy on Golf. Michael, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks. Let's do it again sometime.
Thanks, Hardy. Yeah, and if you ever want to get out there and test your mental game, let's go play around.
Give me a couple more weeks with the book, and then we'll try it out, okay?
Sounds good, man. And it's available on Amazon in paperback, Kindle, and audiobook. So get out there and get it and enjoy your golf game.
Audiobook, so you can multitask. You can drive while listening to the book. See,
this is
not productive.
You can listen to it while playing.
Okay, that's better. That might work, because otherwise we're just spinning our wheels here, Michael. Thanks again for the time. I appreciate it.
You got it, Ari. Thank you.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Welcome back to the Sports Hub Golf Club. To wrap things up here this morning, I sit here and I realize we only got a couple weeks left in the season for the Sports Hub Golf Club. And finish off the show this morning. We'll do next week, and that'll be it, which means we didn't get a chance last year to talk about the big Thanksgiving match. As a matter of fact, it barely got talked about at all, as it happened on Friday of Thanksgiving weekend. And by the time a lot of us were kind of back to, reality, the following Monday, it was, you know, kind of out of our thoughts and minds. So a bit on that in a moment, but there's another big, like, made-for-TV golf event happening this fall. And we won't have a chance to talk about it as it happens, as it's going to be going on in October, and the Sports Hub Golf Club will be done by then. So I wanted to talk about it this morning, and maybe you've heard about this. It's a skins game. They're bringing back the skins game, kind of. Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Hideki Matsuyama, and Jason Day are all playing a skins game October 21st in Japan. Now, first of all, I used to love the old skins game. And short of, I don't know what would approach the level of personality and fun that you had in the original skins games. I mean, back when it was, you know, Jack Nicklaus and Lee Trevino. And you would, I think Chi-Chi played in a couple, and probably, you know, Gary Player may have been involved. I think Freddie Couples, you know, guys that were comfortable around each other and had some fun and did some jawing back and forth and, you know, giants of the game, you know. Do you get that same feeling out of Tiger, Rory, Hideki Matsuyama, and Jason Day? No, but it's still a skins game. Now, if you don't know, skins, it's pretty easy. There's a dollar amount on each hole. You play the first hole, and if somebody wins that hole outright, they win the money for that hole. Two tie for the low score, then all tie. Then it carries over. So if Tiger and Rory both make an opening birdie on the first hole, Matsuyama and Jason Day can both make double bogey. It doesn't matter. There is a tie in that first hole, carries over to the next hole, and so on and so on and so on. So you can have these monster holes that are worth a bunch of money if you've had a bunch of pushes as the skins carry over. Here is where there's a bit of an issue. And this harkens back to last year's Thanksgiving match between Tiger and Phil for $10 million. Do you know what the dollar amount is for this year's The Challenge, Japan Skins? Here's the dollar amount. These four, Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Hideki Matsuyama, Jason Day, will be playing for a total of $350,000. What? Don't these guys get like $2 million for winning a major? Don't you get like $800,000 for finishing in second? 350, that's like a fourth or fifth place finish in a tournament. What? The total amount that they can win at this skins game is $350,000? Yeah. Most holes will be worth $10,000, and then they go up to $20,000, and the 18th hole is going to be worth $100,000. Okay, 18 worth $100,000, that's something. But if you're still saying to yourself, wow, that doesn't seem like a lot of money. It was on CBS Sports, and it was I forgot who wrote about it. But he said, it was Doug Ferguson's AP story. That's what it was. Said, if this seems like a lot of money, it's because it isn't. All the appearance fees that had to be paid to Tiger and Rory, and probably lesser amounts to Matsuyama and Jason Day, didn't leave much left over for the actual prize money in the skins. To put it another way, the original 1983 skins games. Now again, these guys are playing for $10,000 per hole for the first six holes, $20,000 for the next six holes, and then $20,000, I guess, up until 17, and then $100,000 for the 18th hole, okay? And some of the money going to charity, of course, okay? So it's $10,000, $20,000, and then $100,000 for the 18th. In the original skins game in 1983, 36 years ago, do you know what they played for? $10,000 a hole, $20,000 for the middle six holes, and $30,000 on each of the last six. Essentially the same money. They're playing for the same money at this year's skins game that they played for in 1983. Woohoo! I mean, none of them need the money. It's not necessarily about the money, but I'm still in for this reason alone. It almost certainly has to be better than the Thanksgiving match between Tiger and Phil. What a snooze. I mean, Charles Barkley was one of the commentators. At one point, he said, these guys suck. Which, of course, he was joking, but they weren't playing very good golf. And the whole premise of that match was predicated on the personalities of the two players. Oops, excuse me. Both these guys have crappy personalities. I mean, Tiger Woods is maybe the best of all time. Phil Mickelson is, I mean, a champion many times over and a joy to watch on the golf course. But personality-wise, oh, it's just brutal. And what happened to that multi-year deal that these guys talked about after the conclusion of last year's Thanksgiving match? They said, yeah, and for everybody who had the technical difficulties and everyone got their money refunded and blah, 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 don't you worry because we have a multi-year deal in place for the match. Anybody heard about a match going on this Thanksgiving weekend? Is it Tiger versus Phil again? Is it Tiger versus somebody else? Is it two different guys all together? Or they, oh, was that just a bunch of BS? Did they realize how awful it was and they're just not going to do that anymore? I'm all about bringing back the skins game. Might have to bump the money up a little bit. You guys might have to take a little less in your appearance fees so you can play for some money that might actually open some eyes because you're playing for the same money that they played for in 1983. I don't think anyone's going to be blown away by that. All right, coming up this morning, Marshall Hook lurking about. Is Marshall there? Where's Marshall?
Yeah, I'm here.
Marshall, are you on with Mike Flynn this morning, or is it you and Ryan Johnston? What goes on?
No, it's going to be a special edition of Hook and Flynn with Matt McCarthy alongside.
How would you say that you are generally received by Mike Flynn? Because he's, you know, he's a tough nut to crack.
He claims that he doesn't mind working with me. That's his claim, and well, I'm using his words. I don't know that I necessarily believe it, but that's what he said.
High praise coming from Mike Flynn. You should wear that as a badge of honor.
Yeah, I think so. It's really when I heard him say that, my heart grew three sizes.
Yes. Well, I don't imagine you guys will be talking anything about Antonio Brown.
I think we've decided that that's not something anyone cares about, so we're going to avoid it entirely.
What are you going to do, like an 11-hour Revolution/Bruins pregame?
Yeah, and, you know, I think that we're going to get a little bit into what happened to the U.S. men's basketball team out at the TIPA World, whatever that was, thing.
FIBA.
Yeah, we're going to get deep into that as well.
All right. A lot of Antonio Brown, I'm sure. And that Revolution match, that's a big one tonight. Real Salt Lake, Bruce Arena said it's a must-win for this club. So Clyde Sims and I will have the pregame coming up later on this evening. And Marshall Hook, Mike Flynn, you guys have a great show. I'm sure you will.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you very much to Matt McCarthy for being in there this morning, Billy Lanning and everyone else. And next week, it'll be the final installment of this season's Sports Hub Golf Club next weekend right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.